So this week, the Vanapata Sutta, Jungle Thickets, particular sutta has two parallels in the Madhyama Agama from the Sarvastivadin school, translated into Chinese by Gautama Sangadeva in about 430 or so. And those two suttas are virtually identical with the Pali Sutta. There's almost no difference between them, between the two Chinese ones and the Pali. And the only difference between the two Chinese ones that I can tell from Venerable Analia's notes is that that one of them, instead of saying establishing mindfulness and concentration and so on, as the Pali one does, it says something like that one fulfills the virtues or the duties which are suitable for a samana. So, of course, having the same meaning but a slightly different phrasing. And there only seems to be one significant variation between the different versions, which I'll just mention at the end. And there, in addition to those three direct versions, one in Pali, two in Chinese, then there are another two partial corresponding suttas, one of them in the Pali Anguttara Nikaya and one of them in the corresponding Chinese Ekottara Agama, and both of those deal with only a part of the present sutta, not the whole thing. I think they deal with the last section dealing with the living independence on a particular person. So as we go through doing these series of sutta classes, then you know we'll find from week to week, as we do different suttas in slightly different ways, that we will emphasize different things from week to week. And some suttas we found are very long. There's a lot of material in them, a lot of density. For example, next week's sutta is very philosophically and psychologically complex and will take a lot of explanation. Other suttas are very straightforward and give a simple kind of didactic structure. And that one of the suttas, this week's sutta, is one of those suttas, giving some very straightforward but also quite memorable instructions on for a bhikkhu, directly for a bhikkhu, of course also applying for bhikkhunis, and indirectly, of course, also having valuable lessons for lay practitioners as well. So you can see from the beginning here in the Pali that the standard kind of beginning, and just to notice that in this particular sutta that the Buddha gives the sutta a name, Vanapata Pariyayam. Okay, so the Pariyaya, Vana is the forest or jungle, and this is, Pata is the word translated as thicket. Pariyaya is the like an exposition, and the literal meaning of Pariyaya is, Pari means around, and Yaya is derived from the word to go, so it's a way around something. Okay, so it's a way, it's like an exploration or a way of looking or comprehending something, way of looking around something. And Pariyaya was quite frequently used in the suttas as a word that they'd use to, when they were talking about the name of a sutta, would be called a Pariyaya of one sort or another. Okay, and just a reminder of, you know, of a couple of points. Of course, this sutta is in Savatthi, Jetavana, Savatthiyang. So these, of course, these phrases we've been chanting every week, and they should be becoming quite familiar to us as we chant them each week. We learn the phrases, learn the Pali, and we learn to somehow notice a few of the grammatical features of the language as well. And so as we're going each week, rather than trying to teach the grammar all in one hit, I'll just go through each a little bit by little bit and mention a few things. And gradually we can learn to sort of pick up a bit of a feel for the grammar, so that when we come to look at it more intensely at some time, if we choose to, then we'll have a better, it'll be easier for us. So in this case, this kind of sentence is a kind of classic structure, ekang samayang bhagava, on one, ekang samayang being an idiomatic phrase, on one occasion, at one occasion. Bhagava is, of course, the Buddha, the Blessed One. Now, just as a kind of a peculiarity of this phrase, notice that it ends with a long A, okay? Bhagava savatthiyang viharati jetavane anatapindikasa arame. And often you find that people who, when they're talking about people's names in Pali, and then they'll say something like, oh, if it's a feminine form, it ends in a long A, and if it's a masculine form, it ends in an O. And that's not actually true at all. There are plenty of feminine forms that end in O and plenty of masculine forms that end in a long A. It just happens that some of the common ones end up with in that way. So in this case, this is a masculine form, masculine nominative singular, Bhagava, and ending in a long A. It's actually a consonant declension. Bhagava as the subject of the sentence. So the subject meaning it's the he's the person who's carrying out the action of the verb. So here the verb is viharati, to stay or dwell, and the Blessed One dwells. Okay, it's present tense. The Blessed One dwells at Sarvati. Now, notice some peculiarities of the language here. Here we have Sarvati is the name of the city. Okay, now of course, the Buddha wasn't literally dwelling in Sarvati. He was living in a forest monastery outside of Sarvati. But the form that's used here is Sarvatiyang is a locative form. And locative form most directly means in. But here we wouldn't say in Sarvati because he's not in Sarvati. He lives at Sarvati or around Sarvati. Okay? Jetavane, okay? The Jeta's grove. Notice the same word grove, the vana. It's the same word as in the title of our sutta. Anathapindikasa, arame. And here, Anathapindika, of course, the name of the great donor of the Buddha, who donated the Jetavana, and the most generous lay supporter at that time. Many stories about his tremendous generosity and faith. And in his arama, okay, now, this form here, the asa form, is what they call a genitive form here, meaning belonging to. So it's the same form which in English you would express with apostrophe S. Okay? So when you're translating that, you would say Anathapindika's park with apostrophe S. And not only does it sound a little bit similar being apostrophe S, it is actually historically descended from the same root as this form here. So the English apostrophe S is like a decayed version of this earlier, or something similar to this earlier Pali form of asa at the end, meaning belonging to. Arame. Now notice here, arama is also locative. So in the park, in the Jetavana, in Sarvati, all of these words have the same grammatical ending, okay? They're all locative case. But you'll notice that they don't look the same. Jetavane ends with an E, arame also ends with an E, but Sarvatiyang doesn't end with an E. Nevertheless, it is actually the same grammatical case. It just takes on a different form in this particular instance because it's a feminine form. So the singular, locative singular is Sarvatiyang, but it agrees with Jetavane and arame, okay? All of them referring to the place that the Buddha is dwelling at. And it's always very interesting to notice and to remember that the names for a monastery in the early times, in early Buddhism, are usually either vana or arama, as here. And vana meaning a jungle, arama meaning a park. And of course these were the parks or the estates, almost like an estate which was maintained by either by the citizens or by wealthy citizens like Anathapindika. And they'd get a nice patch of ground, a bit like, you know, our national parks and things we have these days. And there would be a pleasant area and it would be maintained. They'd clear out the undergrowth and so on. And people could go there for enjoyment, to enjoy nature and so on. And it's often in those kinds of places that the monasteries would be established, much the same as the forest monasteries are today. And it's interesting to notice recently there was an argument made by the American scholar Gregory Chopin, and he was trying to argue that we don't really know what an early Buddhist monastery was, because the early names for a monastery is an avasa and a vihara, and both of those mean basically somewhere where you're dwelling, okay, just a dwelling place, and so from that we can't really conclude about what kind of place it was. And unfortunately Chopin's argument, as so frequently, ignored the simple fact that the most common words for a monastery in the early days are not vihara or avasa, but in fact are vana or arama. And we do know precisely what kind of place a vana and an arama are. They are a forest or a park. And so this is where the early Buddhist monasteries were. Okay, so I just I'm just giving you a bit of a detailed explanation of some of the grammar and so on involved in that particular sentence, because I'm sure it's one that you're familiar with by now, and so to get a bit of an idea on that. Are there any questions about that before we're going on? So the next, thus have I heard at one occasion, the Blessed One was living at Savatthi in Jetta's grove in Atapindika's park. There he addressed the bhikkhus thus, "Bhikkhus, Venerable Sir," they replied, "the Blessed One said this, because I shall teach you a discourse on jungle thickets. Listen and attend closely to what I shall say." "Yes, Bhante," the bhikkhus replied, "the Blessed One said this, here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu lives in some jungle thicket. While he's living there, his unestablished mindfulness does not become established. His unconcentrated mind does not become concentrated. His undestroyed taints do not come to destruction. He does not attain the unattained supreme security from bondage. And also the requisites of life that should be attained by one gone forth, robes, arms, food, resting place, and medicinal requisites, are hard to come by. The bhikkhu should consider thus, I'm living in this jungle thicket. While I'm living here, my unestablished mindfulness does not become established. My unconcentrated mind does not become concentrated. My undestroyed taints do not come to destruction. And I do not attain the unattained supreme security from bondage. And also the requisites of life that should be obtained by one gone forth, that is robes, arms, food, resting place, and medicinal requisites, are hard to come by. That bhikkhu should depart from the jungle thicket that very night or that very day. He should not continue living there." Okay?
Which words are jungle thicket?
As in the title of the sutta, Vanapatta. Okay? Vanapatta.
Just the one word?
Yeah. It's a compound word, yeah.
That's a really interesting intent. The Buddha showing that your environment is very important to your that supportive conditions.
In what way? What kind of conditions?
I suppose, if you look at the four requisites, one thing, that it's about the environment that you live in.
Yeah.
You're in the jungle, okay, and it's not working out and you should leave.
Yeah.
So obviously the environment is having some kind of effect on the person.
Yeah.
So the environment must be a very important place for development.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. And, you know, sometimes... sometimes this is kind of presented in a slightly idealist way, like, you know, oh, if your mind is unconditioned, then you shouldn't be affected by things. But of course, your mind isn't unconditioned, and it is affected by things. And so the reality is that the mind is affected by its surroundings, very deeply affected. And yeah,
and just the importance of basic things.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he says, you know, you might not get a lot of food, and you might not have all your requisites and all this.
Mm.
You can do without too much. You've got to have that environment that supports the development of your mind.
Yeah.
It sort of made that more of a priority, it seems.
So just a few points on the text as we go through. Bhikkhu Bodhi is translated as living in a certain jungle thicket, but it's actually living in dependence. It says this word upanisaya, which is quite interesting because it is not quite captured in Bhikkhu Bodhi's translation there. So the word upanisaya, meaning it's the same word as used for dependence on a teacher, yeah? And it's the same word, similar to the word used for the requisites themselves are regarded as nisayas. And so one's dependent on these things, the things of life.
Essentials.
The essentials, yeah, exactly, yeah. And so it's a bit tricky to capture that nuance in English translation. But it's that idea that you are dependent, in some sense, on that environment, on your surroundings. And it's the same word, like more normally, here it's a vanapatang, you're dependent on a forest. But actually more normally it talks about being upanisaya, being dependent on, for the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis to be dependent on a certain lay follower. So you'd be living in support, in dependence on a certain lay follower. Like we're just living here in dependence on Natasha. So keeping a... and, and the rest of you to keep us going and so on. And the town, or you'd say that our monastery is living independence on the town of Bundanoon to keep us going and so on for support. So now notice one of the interesting little points here is about the way that the path is phrased. Okay, so the Buddha could have phrased that in just about any way. He could have said, you know, while doing that you know, you doesn't develop the Eightfold Path, or you know, doesn't find that suffering is abandoned, or whatever. He could have phrased that in many different ways, but he's chosen a particular way of expressing this, and which is quite specific. So when talking about this part, Anidrang Vanapattang Upanisai Viharati, in a sense this is talking about our sila, okay? Because it's talking about where we're living, which is like the material aspects of our life, okay? So this pertains to our sila, our ethical conduct. And in particular for the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, our ethical conduct is very strongly conditioned by our right livelihood, okay? So that means living a life of dependence, living a life of alms, and so on. And so in a sense, that first phrase, which is sort of the basic theme of the sutta, covers the sila part of the path. So it's referring indirectly to sila, or the ethical part of the path. And then we come to talking about the satina upattati, being obviously, you'll notice here the similarity between these words. If you take the na out of that, and you'll notice that sati upattati is not too dissimilar a word to the very well-known word satipatthana. And in fact, the word satipatthana is precisely a compound of sati and upattati, or whatever one particular form of the verb. So, and satipatthana meaning, so mindfulness here, it says mindfulness not established, okay, or mindfulness not set up. And so this is the establishments of mindfulness, the satipatthana. And so this is a common idiom in Pali that, much more so than in English, where you will use a noun and a verb which have almost identical meanings, and they will be used together for emphasis. Okay, and that's the case here. And I'll just to show the next clause is a bit clearer. So sati na upattati asamahitancha cittang na samadhiyati. So the unconcentrated mind, the mind that's not in samadhi, okay, mind not become concentrated, or is not concentrated, okay? Now notice here that samadhiyati is just the verb form of samadhi. And so this is just a negative form of the same word. So this is not samadhi, mind is not samadhied, okay? And so it's using the same form in the verb and the noun in the same phrase, okay? And that's a very common idiom in Pali, but it's a bit difficult or a bit odd when it's rendered in English. We say the unconcentrated mind is not concentrated. And it's not the kind of, normally we would vary the terms, but in Pali they tend to put them the same way.
But it's interesting to have a negative is formed up in the na.
Yeah.
And you see that in the few languages.
Yes, yeah.
And when Christian.
Yeah, I mean English officially doesn't have na, but unofficially, of course, it's very common.
But to form a negative, you know,
yeah. French, yeah. Na, yeah. And this is all because it's Indo-European language groups, so they're all descended from the same roots. Yeah, Japanese, I'm not sure if that's why that would be the same. Might be a secondary relation, or it might be just coincidence. But certainly with Pali, English, French, and all of those kinds of things, then it's because they're from the same root. So it helps to learn them. You recognize the negatives more easily. You actually have no as well in Pali, is also a negative form. So the other interesting things about this little phrase is notice the use of the word citta here. Now this is something which is, you know, you say, and again in English you translate the unconcentrated mind is not concentrated, and it sort of more or less passes you by. But it's important to notice that in the suttas, the way that the Pali uses the word citta is much more specific. And there are a number of different ways that the word citta is used. Okay, I won't go into the whole thing. There's actually a whole. Actually, maybe I should maybe be able to pass it. You don't want to pop downstairs and grab the Pali Text Society dictionary?
Yes.
from my room. I'll show you some more variant. We'll show you in a minute that the word citta has many different applications, okay, many different meanings and used in a very wide variety of cases. But in a technical sense, when it's used in the context of the path itself, the word citta is very closely associated with samadhi. And in fact, it's often a synonym for samadhi. For example, you have a phrase samadhi bhavana, the development of samadhi, or you have a phrase citta bhavana, and they're just synonyms. Or you have a phrase samadhi sampada, one who's endowed with samadhi, or you have citta sampada, one who's endowed with mind. And so there's a very close meaning here between the mind that's concentrated, the use of the word mind and citta, and the use of the word samadhi or concentration. Okay, and so this is a very useful tip for understanding this, because these words I meant the other one, the Pali Text Society one. Oh, that is Pali Text Society one. Sorry, the old Pali Text Society one, the red one.
Red one.
Yeah, sorry about that. Oops, sorry, my fault. Because citta is used in such a wide variety of contexts, it's difficult to pin down its meaning or to be clear about its meaning in any particular context. So it's very useful to recognize that when it's used in this kind of technical sense, it does have a meaning which is very close to the meaning of samadhi. And in this context, it's used in the context, of course, of the path. Okay? So when the Buddha was talking about the mind in the context of the path, he tended to use the word citta. When he was talking about the mind in the context of the first noble truth, okay, that is the truth of suffering, he tended to use the word vijnana, okay, or consciousness, we translate as consciousness. So that tends to be used for the first noble truth. When he was talking about the second noble truth, so talking about mind, which is the causal factor in originating suffering, okay, so in the first verse of the Dhammapada, mind is the originator of everything, he tended to use the word mano. Mano is associated strongly with karma, okay? So karma is the active force of mind, which is actually the creative force lying behind suffering. So just to clarify that citta is used, that we use words for mind, main words for mind, citta, mano, and vijnana. This is a controversial issue in Buddhism, by the way. The schools argued about it. Certain schools said citta, vijnana, mano have the same meaning. Other ones said, no, they have a different meaning, and they get together and have argy-bargy about it, right? And it still has been up to recent days, and there are lots of academic articles and so on about it. But my feeling about the matter is that they have basically the same meaning, okay? So they basically just mean the mind, okay? So it's quite a similar meaning, but they tend to get used in different contexts, okay? And those different contexts is vijnana gets used in the context of the first noble truth, suffering. Mano tends to get used in the second noble truth of the origin of suffering, especially karma. And citta gets used in the context of the path, especially the development of samadhi. Now, if you look in here, the Pali Text Society Dictionary, this is the entry on citta in the Pali Text Society Dictionary, and another column on the next page. So I won't read through the whole thing, but you'll understand that it has certain... it's a fairly widely applied term, but I'll just read a few of the... definitions. This is not in any way meant to be authoritative, but just giving some idea of the different usages of the word. Okay, it's quite an interesting little article here, so I remembered this one. Okay, the meaning of citta is psychologically the heart, i.e. the center and focus of man's emotional nature, as well as that intellectual element which inheres in and accompanies its manifestations. Okay, have you got that? I.e. thought is easier. So both emotions and thought is the idea here, so it can encompass both of those things. In this wise, citta denotes both the agent and that which is enacted. For in Indian psychology, citta is the seat and the organ of thought. As in the verb chinteti, there are two stems closely allied and almost inseparable in meaning. Okay, so that's a etymological point. The meaning of citta is best understood when explaining it by expressions familiar to us, as with all my heart, with my heart and soul, I have no heart to it. Blessed are the pure in heart, singleness of heart, all of which emphasize the emotional and cognitive side rather than of thought more than its mental and rational side. It may therefore be rendered by intention, impulse, design, mood, disposition, state of mind, reaction to impressions. It is only in later scholastic language that we are justified in applying the term thought in its technical sense. I wouldn't have even thought in the later scholastical sense the word thought is particularly useful, but anyway. It needs to be pointed out as complementary to this view that citta nearly always occurs in the singular, and out of that means the heart or the mind, and out of 150 cases in the Nikayas, only 3 times in the plural, that is thoughts. Okay, so the citta is usually regarded as in a singular form, whereas say vijnana is typically in a plural form. So you have like the 6 sense consciousnesses. Okay, so it's usually in a plural form. It's analyzed up, whereas citta is the mind treated as a whole thing. And again, that's why it's suitable in a context of samadhi, because this is like bringing the mind into a whole. So it's suitable that we should be using a word which is usually used in the singular.
Can you repeat those 4 words in relation to Four Noble Truths?
Vijnana is usually used, not always, because vijnana is sometimes used like in the base of infinite consciousness, vijnana and chayatanang. So in that case, it's in the context of samadhi. But usually, it's in the First Noble Truth, like in the 5 akhandas and dependent origination and so on.
Second one, mano,
tends to be used in the sense of karma. Yeah. So we're making karma so that it's like associated with the Second Noble Truth, origination of suffering. And the third one, citta, is for the Fourth Noble Truth in the path.
Cheto,
oh, that was very controversial. Third one, missed out. The ending of all the others. Cessation of all the others.
Cheto
vimutti, yeah, could be.
Maybe you might find it somewhere.
I think about that, but cheto is usually similar to citta in this kind of
case. It was very close.
Yeah. I have to think about that one.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So establishing mindfulness, bringing the mind to concentration. Aparikina cha asava na parikayang gacchanti. So the asavas, the defilements, which have not yet been ended or brought to an end, are not brought to an end. Parikayang gacchanti. Okay. So notice this, of course, a very strong, and then the last one, anupattancha anuttarang yoga kemang na nupapunati. So one does not attain the unexcelled freedom or safety, okay, kema, from yoga, from bondage. Okay? So you have to be careful about entering that into some internet sites, because you can get into problems. Now, it happened to me. They wouldn't let me use the word. So there's of course a sequence of 4 things here. 1 is establishing mindfulness. 2 is getting the mind concentrated. 3 is abandoning defilements. And then 4 is realizing complete freedom, of course being nibbana. And that's of course like the sequence, the basic sequence of practice is compressed there and expressed very succinctly. The establishment of mindfulness essentially, and I don't want to limit it in that way, but basically it means just doing your meditation, okay? Now that's a very simple way of putting it, okay? I don't want to say that that's the complete or the full meaning of it, but the simple meaning of sati na upatthati or sati na upatthati is to just sit down and do your meditation, okay? Watch your breath going in and out or whatever other meditation you mean, meaning to do. Making the mind or bringing the mind to samadhi, of course, is the state of mind, which is the result of that. So you sit down, you watch your breath coming in and out and so on, and that produces a state of refined and purified consciousness, which we call samadhi, of course, being the 4 jhanas. Okay, so there's a causal relationship between those. And so for one in samadhi, of course, very often the other stages that they put in here, which is kind of skipped over because it's just compressed, but normally it says you then see things as they really are and then become dispassionate and fade away and turn away from them, and then the defilements become to an end and one realizes the true freedom. Okay, so this is a very, very nice little compact expression of the whole way of practice. And notice how that builds on the first sentence is expressing sila, the ethical part of the path, and then this part is expressing the samadhi, the mindfulness, and samadhi is expressing the samadhi part of the path, and then the rest of it is the right knowledge and right freedom as the result of the Eightfold Path. So all of the sila, samadhi, panya is all incorporated just in that one little sentence. Okay? So then, next sentence, yechiko ime pabaditena jivita parikara. So, samudanetaba, these requisites of life that should be attained by one gone forth, and here of course being the basic list of the four requisites, and this is always expressed in the terms of this very long compound in the Pali, which we've already seen once or twice. I know you're great fans of that and you're chanting. Jivara, okay, being the robe. It's much easier to do these things with with breaking the compounds up. First one is jivara, is a robe, okay. The next one, pinda bata, is the alms food, okay. So the pinda being a lump, okay. So a pinda is a lump, like a lump of rice. Okay, bata is a drop. Okay, so dropping the lump of rice. Okay, or the lump of rice that's dropped into the bowl. Okay, this is the pindabhata. So the robe, lumps of rice dropped in the bowl. Senasana. Okay, so what you've got, you've actually got, here you've got, the reason it's so long is because most of these words, like even the word pindabhata, itself is a compound. So this whole thing is a compound, but then within the compound then you've got other compounds, yeah? So it makes it all very complicated. The robe, food, and then senasana is another compound. Sena is a sleeping place, asana is a sitting place, okay? So this is senasana. Sometimes you could literally translate it as the sleeping and sitting place, but of course just means the place where you dwell and do your both the sleeping and meditation. So it's the senasana. And then the last one, of course, is the most important, being the medicinal requisites. And this being the being the Pali translation of dark chocolate. I mean, it's a loose translation, but gilana meaning ill. Okay, gilana is ill or sick. Okay, and we're very lucky that in the Vinaya, gilana is defined in a very broad way. So even sweeping and raising up a sweat while sweeping is considered to be gilana. Okay, and so it means not just ill or sick in the sense that we have, but like I said, any kind of physical disease or something like that. So even like, you know, being thirsty and needing a drink or something like that is gilana. Any kind of physical discomfort or disease. Pachaya. Pachaya, again a word, another word meaning support. We've had this word here, nisaya or upanisaya, also meaning support. And here pachaya is another word with the same meaning, support. So support for the sick, okay? Bhesaja. And bhesaja is just meaning medicine. So medicinal support for the sick, okay? And then the last word, parikara, is just the general word for the requisites, okay? So again, parikara is another word simply meaning support, okay? And so the whole compound here meaning robes, also meaning the requisites, so you translate the requisites of robes, alms food, sleeping and sitting place, and medicinal supports for the sick. Okay, so that's how you'd break down that compound.
Is parikara the word where the Thais get borikan?
Exactly, yeah. Borikan, in Thai they pronounce borikan.
I think the translation of sleeping is much better than this dwelling place.
You think so? Is it, yeah, a bit more specific? More information?
Information.
Yeah?
Yogi, you refer to postures as asana.
Asana, yeah. Originally meaning to sit. And I don't know, the root is as, meaning to sit, and I don't know if that has any corresponding terms in English that have a similar meaning. Okay, so the requisites. So these, of course, being the basic requisites for the monastic life, and these will be taught at the ordination ceremony, And the kind of the minimal requirements, of course, the robe being the cast off rag robes, the bindabhata being just whatever you get dropped in your bowl. Sainasana, the minimal support being the root of a tree. And the dilanapachaya, the medicinal support, so the minimal requisite being a fermented cow's urine. And and then. No, but in the vineyard it says that the minimal requisite that you should be content with is fermented cow's urine. And then it immediately goes on to say, but there are extra things that you can have, such as honey, ghee, sugar, and so on, which
makes it fermented cow's
urine. So. But the vineyard gives you quite a nice kind of thing, because it gives you a spectrum, you know. It doesn't say everyone has to be like this or like that, but it says, you know, you should really try with the contentment and so on. But it also says, well, you know, a bit of dark chocolate, never mind.
Do you think people really do
cow's urine? Oh, yeah. Yeah, fermented cow's urine is quite common. As a medicine.
Is it an alcoholic?
I don't know. I have to try it out. No, I don't think so. It's like, it's for me, I think it's like, it'd be like a pickle or something like that, pickled cow's urine. Not necessarily fermented in an alcoholic sense, but like pickled. At least there's not much sugar in it, I wouldn't imagine.
Not much to. Yeah,
soy sauce is fermented.
Urine is very alkaline, so it would be quite caustic rather than acidic.
Yeah.
Alcoholic substance.
Right, yeah. Okay, so these requisites are obtained, samadagachhanti, with difficulty, kasirena, okay, with difficulty. This being an instrumental form, the ena ending being instrumental, so with difficulty. Therefore, that bhikkhu should consider patisanchitabhang, and so this being one of many words in Pali, which can be used to reflect, to consider, to think about, to ponder over. Okay, and it is important to notice this because, you know, it's not the case that the Pali scriptures or the way that the Buddha taught is simply make your mind peaceful and never think of anything. Okay, there are certain cases where it says you have to reflect about this. You have to think about, oh, is this the right thing to do or is it not? Okay, and this happens countless times through the suttas. Okay. Now I'm dwelling in this, dependent on this jungle thicket, and when I'm dwelling in dependence on this jungle thicket, my unestablished mindfulness does not become established, my unconcentrated mind does not become concentrated, the unended defilements do not come to an ending, and the unattained, unexcelled freedom from bondage does not become attained. That and then those requisites for supporting the life of one gone forth, that is to say the requisites of robes, alms, food, dwelling place, and medicinal requisites for the sick, those I obtained with difficulty. Okay, so therefore that bhikkhu should leave, pakkamitabhang, should go out from. So here the word kam is the same root as we use in the word jonkrom or jankamati, to walk or to move. But the prefix pa has a meaning or an implication of out, okay, or from. So pakkamitabhang means go away from. So tamha wanapattha, and this is the ablative case here. Okay, so notice here, this is the tang wanapattang. Okay, here we have tamha wanapattha. Okay, so this one tang wanapattang, meaning just simply that forest thicket, and here it means from that forest thicket. So this being the ablative case, meaning out of or from. Okay, so one should go out from that forest thicket and should not stay there. Okay. So here we have the two things. One is that one's spiritual growth and one's material requisites. In this case, bhikkhu doesn't get either of them. So a sensible bhikkhu would, of course, get out. Now, it gets a bit more complicated. Here, bhikkhu, dwelling in dependence on some jungle thicket while he's living there, his unestablished mindfulness does not become established, his unconcentrated mind does not become concentrated, his undestroyed taints do not come to destruction. He does not attain the unattained supreme security from bondage, and yet the requisites of life that should be obtained by one gone forth are easy to come by. So what should that bhikkhu think? Should that bhikkhu think, here I am, spiritually I'm in decline, I can't meditate, my defilements are getting bigger, my mind is getting worse, but plenty of dark chocolate. Oh, food's pretty good. Oh, pretty nice dwelling. It's a very lovely kuti, and I can kind of stay here, and, you know, it's pretty good. And I've got a telly I can stick in the corner and can watch Neighbours in the evening. Which is the appropriate choice for a bhikkhu or bhikkhuni who's intent on the unexcelled supreme security from bondage? Yeah, I know you're all pondering this thorny problem, wondering what the Buddha's going to say here. Okay? So, they should reflect. Okay. While I'm living in this jungle thicket, my unestablished mindfulness does not become established and so on. I do not get the supreme security from bondage, and yet the requisites of life are easy to come by. However, I did not go forth from the home life into homelessness for the sake of robes, alms food, resting place, and medicinal requisites. Okay? So this is a very important passage here, and so I just point this out in the Pali, nakho banahang. So here the word pana, this is ahang, meaning I, compounded with pana, meaning but. Okay? So banahang, but I did not, ko here is emphatic, jivara hetu, for the sake, the word hetu meaning here for the sake of, robes. Okay? Go forth from the home to homeless life. Not for the sake of a dwelling place, and not for the sake of pindabhata, and not for the sake of medicinal requisites. Okay, so I didn't go forth for the sake of fermented cow's urine. Now, so that's a very good reflection to make whenever we're thinking like that, because it is, you know, we can kind of laugh about it, but it is actually a very genuine concern. And for those of us who have gone forth, we are dependent on the offerings of the lay people, we're dependent on the monastery. Without these things, we can't survive. Okay, and so it's easier for us to laugh at that idea that, you know, we should be living here because we want some material things. But the reality is, of course, we need those material things, and so it is a very serious matter. If we're not getting food, if we're not getting a proper place to stay, then it makes it very difficult to stay. Okay, and so there can be a lot of fear, like if I'm going to go somewhere else, will I be able to get something to eat, you know? And we're saying here we have a very comfortable monastery and we do have good food every day, so, you know, it maybe doesn't seem so urgent for us. But there are a lot of monks and a lot of nuns in a lot of places around the world for whom that isn't true. And that's been true throughout history, that, you know, maybe think, well, if I leave here, where can I go? What can I eat? Okay? And this makes it very hard. Okay, so, but here is the proper way of reflecting, even though that's difficult to do, then you should still realize that, no, this isn't the sake, this isn't the purpose of my holy life, is not to get requisites. Okay, so if you get the requisites but your meditation isn't going well, then you should still leave. But it says here, has the additional word, bhikkhuna sankhapi, it means after reflection, sankhar, another word to reflect or consider. Okay, so it's not quite as emphatic. Okay, so notice the difference. The first one, when you neither your meditation nor your requisites were going well, then you leave that very day. The next state, when meditation's not going well, but your requisites are going well, then after reflecting, you should leave. Okay, and the next case. Bhikkhu living in dependence on a certain town, a certain jungle thicket, meditation is going well. Unestablished mindfulness becomes established, unconcentrated mind becomes concentrated, undestroyed defilements come to destruction, he attains the unattained supreme security of bondage. And yet the requisites of life that should be obtained by one gone forth are hard to come by. The bhikkhu should consider thus, I'm living here in this jungle thicket and so on. However, I did not go forth from home life into homelessness for the sake of the requisites. Okay, while I'm living here, my meditation is going well, my mindfulness is established, my samadhi is established, and I abandon defilements. Having reflected thus that Bhikkhu should continue living in that jungle thicket, okay, he should not leave. Okay, so this is of course the phrase at the end, tena bhikkhuna sankhapi. After reflecting, tasming vanapatte vattabhang. So remember before it had tamha vanapatta, meaning from that jungle thicket. Here it means tasming vanapatte, in that jungle thicket, should remain and should not leave. Okay. And then finally, the best of all the cases, it's just like Santi Monastery, when you're staying here and you can get plenty of robes and arms food and all of the things that you need, and there's plenty of opportunity to live in the jungle thickets and practice your mindfulness and concentrate your mind and abandon your defilements. Then a bhikkhuna yava jivam pitasming vanapatte vattabhang na pakkamitabhang. Bhikkhu should live there for the rest of his life and should not go anywhere else. Okay? Okay? So this is the ideal situation.
So they weren't getting good food or shelter or robes or lumps of rice very often. But obviously it was good for your practice. But previously you were saying that those things were quite important.
Yeah, quite important. But it's still, it's hard. It's a hard decision. That's why it's a hard decision. Yeah.
The previous one would be the more difficult.
It's a more difficult. This one is an easy choice. Yeah. Yeah. And if you're staying there and you're happy, meditation's going well, then it's an easy, and you get the requisites, it's an easy choice. For the other ones, it's not so easy.
So it's then the whole thing, all four of those paragraphs are now prioritizing practice.
Yeah, exactly, above the requisites, yeah. And the material requisites is relevant. It's, you know, it's worth, you need to reflect on, you need to consider it, but it ultimately is secondary. Yeah.
Is there time for a question?
Of course. If you can remember it and ask later would be good, only because my laptop's about to die.
Okay.
And so I get through the rest of the slides before that happens. And I didn't bring the power pack. Okay, so then the sutta then repeats according to not just a jungle thicket, but also according to a village, gama, a nigama, a town, or a nagara, a city, okay? And a janapada is a country, okay? A certain country or district. So different, basically the same thing according to different situations. Now it's interesting that this is, you know, you just see how this appears in the text. Now this is, you have this pair thing, which just means everything's abbreviated, okay? But notice how easy that is to kind of put in there. Now, one of the scholars, Pandey, whose findings are interesting and not always reliable, he's argued that this particular passage must have been a later insertion because the bhikkhus in earlier times were living in the forest. And the title of the sutta, everything refers to living in the forest. And then this whole bit about living in towns and cities and so on was a later insertion dealing with a different situation. I'm not particularly convinced about that argument. But it is interesting to notice, just on a textual ground, how easy it is to make those kinds of assertions. Of course, you know, they're just a few words, really. And you just have to substitute vanapattang, you substitute gamang, and then you've got a whole new slant on the suttas, other bhikkhus. Imagine if you took that out, then you'd be depicting a situation when, you know, it was assumed that all the bhikkhus were living in forests. Yeah? Now we've got a situation where they may be living in forests or in towns or in cities or wherever. Okay, so it's a quite a different perspective on the sutta, which you can get by just changing one or two words. Okay, so I'm not trying to make any claim about whether that phrase should be or shouldn't be, but just to notice how these changes can appear. And then the last case is Anyatarang Puggalang Upanisaya Viharati. Okay, so here, living independence on a certain person. Okay, so this means like it's a case where you're like invited to live. For example, when I was in Thailand, I was staying in northern Thailand, in Nan, and I was living independence on Somchit and his family, and they would bring food out to me every day. Actually, it was a bit half and half because I would also go for alms and eat the alms food as well. So it was kind of also on the village. But basically, I was living in a kuti that was owned by a certain individual, a certain person, rather than in a monastery or something like that. And there was really just one person and his family who were looking after me there. So this is that situation of living in independence on a certain pugala, a certain person. And of course, the same situation also applies, the same different qualifications apply. The only difference really here is that it says anapuchha pakamita bang nanu bandhita bo. So anapuchha means without questioning, okay, should leave, nanu bandhita bo, should not follow. Okay, so what this refers to is that there's a polite understanding that when you are living independence on a person in that way, that you should make a polite request if you're going to be leaving, and you should sort of say, listen, I'm going to be going off, and thank them for their support and so on. And so this is saying that if the person doesn't even give you the requisites, and then there's no need to make, having invited you there, and he doesn't even give you the food and so on that he's promised you, then there's no need to make a polite request before you leave. Okay? And all the rest in the different kinds of cases. Requesting, having reflected thus, that person should depart from that person, that bhikkhu should depart from that person after taking leave. So this is the case where you're meditation is not going well, but you do get the requisites after taking leave, sankhapi. Should not follow them. And having that person should continue following that person, should not depart from him. Even if it's difficult to get the requisites, then you should stay if your meditation is going well. Now, the interesting one is the final one, which is of course, if you're getting your mindfulness is established, unconcentrated mind becomes concentrated, the undestroyed defilements are destroyed, and you attain the unexcelled freedom from bondage, and then you get the requisites easily, then you should reflect and so on. So this is the best of both worlds case. And interesting little phrase at the end, tena bhikkhave bhikkhuna yavajivampi so bhugalo anubandhitabbo napakkamitabbang, you should live with that person or follow that person for the rest of your life, api, and should not leave, api, even, panujja manenapi, even if told to go away. Right? So you're staying there with a certain person, even says, get lost, get out of here, I don't want to keep you here, and even then, you shouldn't go away from that person. So that seems perhaps a little bit odd. And this is the only phrase which of any significance which is different. This is, I think, only found in the Pali version, not found in the Chinese version. So perhaps being a peculiarity of the Pali tradition, but it does seem a bit odd if you're living in dependence on someone and even they tell you to go.
It could come in useful, that phrase, though. Does it actually say that, like, in those words?
What?
To go?
It's a bit... panujja, is expelled, almost literally like expelled, even if it's expelled, yeah.
Because in the Navinia Paramisa of dependence, basically if you're not doing your duties properly or your teacher's not doing their duties properly, then you can leave and they can kick you out as well. So this kind of... is there, obviously, if you're not doing what you're meant to be doing, can be...
In the context of this sutta, that even if an adult says there's no room, the monk has the right to show, because the adult knows the theory already. So would that be? Because we have been versed about sutras. It's good for my samadhi, I would say, yes.
You think you should stay, even if the abbot tells you to go?
Then he can ask the faith, then he would consider samadhi, because samadhi never should know really achieve samadhi.
You were going to ask a question a little bit earlier.
Yes, but is it all right now?
Yeah, of course,
Because Mahathir posed the hypothesis earlier, if a person is unconditioned, he should be able to live irrespective of the situation in this context.
Yeah.
But then you post certain conditions, like seven things that is appealing to a meditator, like resting places, in the path, and then arms food, and whether food appeals to you, whether time, then posture, also included people, whether they are talking and disturbing.
Yeah.
Seven things.
Yeah.
So, then also you mentioned in the first place, say, rural, urban, rural, and forest setting.
Yeah.
When you take ethnic consideration, sometimes even if a person is gone beyond, considering the four basic requisites, he may move, isn't it?
Oh, of course, yeah. And, you know, that does happen. And, you know, and people who you see people who practice in different ways. I mean, sometimes people who are very advanced in their practice, they still have just a tremendous love of the forest and so on. And like Mahakasapa, he said he lived in seclusion out of compassion for sentient beings. Yeah. Yeah. So this is also another motivation to set a good example.
But this hypothesis stands in both ways. One, you should be able to live in forest, rural, urban setup, empty of anything, condition or material side.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they are exempted also.
It still won't. I mean, obviously, it won't affect their state of liberation.
Yes.
But it might even be, you know, like even with Ajahn Chah, that in the last years of his life, and he was spending a lot of time, you know, he was just spending a lot of time with people and talking and things like that, and his samadhi would get a bit rusty, you know. So I mean, rusty is relative, you know. Depending on your, maybe it took him like three breaths to get into jhana or something rather than just one. But
but yes, as you mentioned, in that condition has no new samadhi to attain.
Yeah.
But still need to recharge maybe sometimes.
Yeah. You just need to, exactly right.
Yeah.
Because it's conditioned and the body's conditioned and all of these kinds of things, you know. Yeah.
And there's a verse in the Dhammapada that says, inspiring is the places where arhats dwell, whether in the forest or in the village.
Very true.
And another goodness part is that 17 is good number. You were expecting another person, now we have 17 exactly. And also we have 9 months, Lord Buddha's cult is 9.
17, good number.
Yes. This is the sutta number 17?
Your wishes in the morning, once you have seen the night, they will give it. Exactly, good.
Also, with the requisites, there's the gains in honor, Samyutta.
Yeah, it's very
straightforward.
Yes, very stern collection.
Although the discourse is short, but it's very effective.
Yeah, this is one of those suttas which you know, you don't forget.
Yes.
You know? It's very, the clarity of the message in there is very very powerful.
Also, you gave a good Pali account. Today it's very helpful.
Can you remember that long word of Pahat?
Yes,
it was very easy. It's part of our regular. It's part of our regular chanting.
It's very, that Pali is very similar to.
Is it?
Locate endings and getting something from, or if somebody comes from a place, it has the prefixes. You tell some go away, it has a prefix like ma pit, then you put the ma in the beginning. It's very similar. It sounds too.
It sounds a lot of the art sound,
How would you deal with someone whom you asked to leave and they said no?
And they said no?
My meditation.
God. yeah, ultimately. I mean, usually it doesn't really happen if things are not going well, and then there's usually a kind of a mutual understanding that that you know, the person has to leave. And if you kind of put your foot down, as you have to do occasionally, and then say, listen, you have to go, then, yeah, I mean, that's in the case of someone who's, you know, misbehaving or something like that. Occasionally it does happen that you do need to call the policeman. It hasn't happened here, but it has happened in, Manachat, and I'm not sure if it's happened in Bodhinyana. I think it might have happened in Bodhinyana, yeah?
The crazy lady that came in the taxi?
Yeah. Yeah, so that's more in the case of, you know, people with psychological problems and so on. So
generally, Master, it will be the adult last to act because you are nervous about the fear.
Yeah.
These things don't arise normally. Because you're nervous about this sutta, so you can expect monk asking, can I stay if you don't have room? For example, can you come for a short period? The invited monks arrive, and then at least the person might ask, I can stay on the tree root. This is conducive to meditation. So the abbot knows in the head that this request can come up.
Is it possible that he was just having a joke?
What?
In that last
part? Even if he told the girl that. Yeah, it could be, you know, it could be like by way of emphasis, you know?
Yeah, because he's saying that, you know, all the defilements are gone and everything, and because your smart is so good, so why would this situation come up
with? Yeah. Well, it does seem a bit odd if the person you're dependent on is happy to give you all the requisites, but he's also telling you to get lost. I mean, it seems like not a bit of a confused situation.
Mother-in-law.
Yeah, and maybe she's got like a little dog that they have to look after. And then he's worried about getting up because he has to get up at like 7 o'clock. I don't know. It could be, yeah.
Well, it's a private invitation to stay far away season in a private house or then in a monastery.
Yeah.
Monastery, of course, may be liberal, but private invitation has to be considered serious.
Because it's definitely from that person, yeah?
Mm. Do you know if the Buddha was, when he was staying there, was he staying in a building or in the open?
I mean, he would do both. Most of his life he was living in kutis, probably. You know, when he was staying at the Jetavana, in Savatthi, then he would have had a kuti there and various other monasteries. There's various stories of, you know, quite a few stories when the monks would come and then the Buddha was going to his dwelling place and close the door and these kinds of things. So obviously he was living in a kuti for a lot of the time, but equally so, he was obviously still doing a lot of wandering around the place, and that's right up until the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, his last discourse, and he was just sort of wandering around with Venerable Ananda, and they just take their bowl and they just go and stay in different forests and shrines and things here and there. And so that's even when he was 80 years old, he was still doing that. Yeah. Of course, it's a bit warmer in India.
Maybe it expresses the situation of the adapters.
In what way?
You should stay there even if you're told to leave. Maybe they were told to leave now.
Oh, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, it's been a funny thing.
I'd love to hear what he would say these days, the different ways he would teach in the modern world now.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the idioms and the expressions and... yeah, it'd be amazing.
And he'd be on the head.
Be on like Ray Martin or something.
I just had this terrible flash of American evangelism. That was just scary.
He'd be on Oprah.
Yeah.
And today we've got this most amazing story.
Modern similar could be just as quick as your broadband, so too he disappeared and reappeared.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe he's sleeping in other tree roots, up until the edge of
the
ocean.
Yeah.
I remember 9 years ago. Imagine wandering around for hours.
You probably have a lot more dissenting
people against him these days, because if he was, rather than just the Nagantas or
A few blood vomiters here and there. Well, in the next sutta it says, Manishva said, Dandapani the Sakyan shook his head, wagged his tongue and raised his eyebrows until his forehead was puckered in three lines.
Is this the next one?
Next sutta. Madhupindika sutta. So that's next week. So the it's difficult to say. I mean, there's a lot of,
just on population.
On population and the...
On telly, on opera.
Yeah, participating in email, in internet chat rooms and discussion groups. There's a law in chat room discussions, which is formulated. It says that as the number of contributions to a particular discussion thread continue, then the probability of a comparison, this is particularly I think about political and religious issues, the probability of comparison to Hitler or the Nazis approaches one. So it was very interesting. It shows that people's the way people behave in those kinds of forums gets very extreme. Okay, so let's finish by paying respects.
Naraham Samma Sambuddha Bhagava Buddham Bhagavantam Abhivadi Svakato Bhagavata Dhammo Dhammam Namasami Patipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Saṅgho Saṅgha